since 4 years, more or less, since the last time I've been here. Last time I was here, actually, down in the one room. But given it's been 4 years, one of the reasons why we wanted to come here, a limited visit back to Australia, was because this one of the settlers has been keeping contact with us. We felt that somebody has been supporting us, praying for us, and we want to just thank you for that. Now, we first, perhaps, just like to introduce our family. Maybe if we just come here for a minute. Don't usually get to see the whole family together. We're sort of finding out all the meetings we're going to, that if not so easy to have everyone come, it's a bit shy. But this is a once in a lifetime, because it's maybe the last time that we're able to come back all together. It gets more and more difficult, more and more expensive every time. So this is Manolik, my wife. She's Spanish. And then we've got Joel, or Joel, you know, it's Joel. He's 13, thinks he's going to be taller than me. And as Anna said, and Esther, Anna said, and she's 7, and then Rebecca, and she's 5. And that's always competing, you know, to see if it's actually almost like two sisters. So that's the family. And appreciate you for having us come here. Before putting on the slides, which with them, I'll try and give a bit of a visual overview first on the area that we're working in. The problem is, most people, when you think of Spain, would have a sort of stereotyped concept of what Spain is, as most people would have of Australia. Outside of Australia, most people think Australia's got kangaroos jumping around all the streets, and koalas hanging on every lamp pole, which in some areas maybe is true, but not in all areas. And the same goes for Spain, which most people think is bullfighting, Spanish dancing, etc., which is true in some areas, but not in all. And actually, not very true in our area, which you'll soon see with the slides, is we're right up in the, just imagine Spain being that. And Madrid being in the middle, we're right up in the northwest corner in an area called Galicia, which is actually quite different, as you'll see with the first presentation on the slide. Then with the second presentation, I just want to give a quick review of the work, more or less how it started and how it has progressed since the, well, nearly 15 years ago that we began. And it has changed. And so with the second presentation will be to sort of give a small, quick review and an update, and then finishing off with a sort of a trying to explain the reason why we're working, how we're working. Now, perhaps some of you, if you don't know us, if you don't if you haven't sort of heard or kept up to date with the way we're working, you might find it a little strange the way we're doing missionary work, but. A missionary, when you go to another culture, another country, I think we all have the same aim. We have the gospel doesn't change, and we want to communicate that gospel to a culture, but the culture changes, the people are different. Some places are more closed, and others more open, and Spain is one of those more closed, with a very set, very closed, a very traditional culture. That Christianity, as we would understand it, is seen as a very small minority. Actually, it would be seen as a sect, where you have 99.9% of Spanish people that consider themselves Christian, but Roman Catholic. But Catholicism, that hasn't had to compete, it hasn't had to change, it hasn't had to do any reforming over the centuries, whereas in the rest of Europe, we had the Reformation, which is where eventually most of what we would understand true Christian churches, Bible-believing churches, have evolved from. That never happened in Spain. Spain actually, at that time, invented the Counter-Reformation, which was the Inquisition, to squash the Reformation. So it never actually happened in Spain. The Roman Catholic Church never had to compete. It's always had almost complete power, politically and religiously, and that's molded and bound the whole culture, even though most people would be nominal, they're Roman Catholic. And so you come along with the gospel, and you're basically seen as a minority that up until not so long ago, we're talking about perhaps up until about 25 years ago, didn't have any what's the word, liberty. There was no religious freedom. And going back not so long, it was persecuted. So there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of suspicion, there's a lot of barriers, there's a lot of, it's similar to how we would see the Jehovah's Witnesses or the sect. And even though we have religious freedom now, there's a lot of barriers that need to be broken down before you can even start getting someone to begin to listen. And once they begin to listen, then you're dealing with the whole pre-concept, pre-education of what Christianity is, based on the Roman Catholicism, which is not very biblical. And so you have to find time to be able to get people long enough to listen, so almost re-educate before the truth begins to get through, which really only comes through when people begin to read for themselves God's Word, which most haven't. So we found that, as we're going to explain with the presentation, that a way of being able to break down a lot of those barriers of distrust, a way of being able to make those first contacts, a way of being able to maintain over a long period of time those contacts, and to be able to have the right to be able to share, has been to work through what we call social work, getting involved with social problems, and then using that as a bridge, or as an open door, as a bridge, as a means of being able to share the gospel with the long-term aim, or what we're really there for, to church planning. Because there are more than 7,500 pounds in the cities in Spain that don't have any evangelical church, as we would understand. And so the biggest need is church planting. But to get there, we found that it's being a good strategy to go at it the way that the God has led us, and as you've seen through the slides. I'd just like to just share very quickly a couple of verses in Luke chapter 7, perhaps just to give a little bit of an idea of the concept. Where we find Jesus, of course, was the supreme evangelist. He was the one who had more interest than anyone to get the gospel, the good news, to a lost world. But we find that in the short term time, the few years that Jesus actually ministered and gone about, say, evangelizing, he didn't spend all his time just, how would we say, typically just grabbing people and explaining to them the four spiritual laws or the whole gospel. Actually, he went about it in many different ways. And yet, the result was that people were always wanting to know more, wanting to hear more. And as we see in just one case, just an example here in Luke 7, giving glory to God. And I just want to read from verse 12. And it says, now when he came nigh to the gate of the city, behold, there was a dead man carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, and much people of the city was with her. Now we have here a sad situation, because this lady, her husband has died, her son has died, which is a time for mourning, but she's a widow, so her husband has also died, we don't know how long ago. But we do know, we can understand from this, that not only is she mourning for the second time, over a personal loss, but she's got a hard time ahead of her. Without a husband and without a son to look after, there's really no one who's going to look after her. So she's probably in quite a desperate, distressed situation. And we see in verse 13, when the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said unto her, weep not. Now, Jesus knows everyone, but in the literal sense here, he didn't. No, he wasn't related to her, wasn't one of his disciples, maybe not even have come to one of his multitude meetings, but he has this brief encounter. He sees a distressed person, sure, he understands what's ahead of her, what's happened, what situation she's in, and he is moved by compassion. He's not indifferent. And we find also that not only is he moved, but he gets involved. says, talk to her, gives her words of hope. You know, we've not. And Cain, in verse 40, we find that he then did, on this special occasion, what only he could do. But we find that, I think there's even something there for us to learn. And he touched the beard, and then Abraham stood still, and he said, "Young man, I say unto thee, arise." And he that was dead sat up and began to speak, and he delivered him to his mother. And there came a fear on all, and they glorified God, saying, "That a great prophet has risen up among us, and that God has visited his people." Now, we're not going to go around raising dead. But we can, as God gives us opportunities, and this is what we have found in Spain, as God gives us opportunities, and sometimes the opportunities just throw it on you, where people really have need, and you basically have to say, well, what am I going to do? Am I going to just cross my arms and not do anything? Or I'm going to, as God enables me, as God empowers me, try to get involved. Perhaps it's just a word of encouragement. You know, when people are in need, that's when sometimes, if you're able to get alongside them, you can share some of God's news. If you get involved, even better. If you're able to help them, as God enables you to be able to help them, even better still. And many times, you know, through that process, God does something special and raises a person from the spiritual dead. And that's how we've been seeing that through this involvement to people's needs, which is basically, in our case, with unemployment, and also in many cases with drug addiction, we're finding that we're able to have good contact, we're able to have a long term process, or a long time that we're able to have just a contact, and almost a daily contact with many people, to be able to share our faith when the opportunity comes, and get people interested in spiritual things. And if God touches their life, we're able to see, and we've seen eventually a church being able to be established out of that work. So that's just a few thoughts which I'm trying to explain now with the slides. Can we have the lights off? So it looks like Australia, doesn't it? Actually, that's why I put that slide on. Because many parts of Spain, you feel quite at home. Sunny Spain, open plains, sheep, not as many and not as big, because I think all the Marina sheep were actually from Spain, but Australia kind of got them all. You left Spain without any. But if you go to Madrid, which is the capital in the centre of Spain, and you would come to visit us, which you're all welcome, you have to go up northwest to the the top hand corner, sitting on top of Portugal, and you'll pass through a lot of country scene areas like that. You'll pass through a lot of villages, you'll pass through a lot of castles, monasteries, all sorts of interesting architecture, until you eventually come to some big mountain ranges, which are usually snow clad in the wintertime. And you come, once you pass that those mountains, you enter into Galicia, which is the region or the state where we're working, living. Now that Spain changes from there on. It's always like Tasmania, or like Ireland, or like Scotland. It's very green, it's very rainy, it's very lush. And actually, each region of Spain has its own, has a different culture, even in many cases, a different language. And in Galicia, our heritage, or our, what's the word? Our cultural roots are in the Celtic culture. We're actually related to the Celts, so we have a lot in common with similar some things in Scotland and Ireland. Even the bagpipes is one of the typical instruments played in the folkloric music. Just put this in when you get to the coast, it's a rugged coastline with a lot of small beaches, very nice beaches, cold water, a lot of fishing villages. Most people would live off the sea or off the land. And there are a lot of what we call rias, which are like fields, big long entrances to the river mouths. And that's the one that's going into Ferrol, which is the town where we're living, which was a big important navy base, has a population of about 100,000. Now, it also is where Franco was born.
He was the dictator who, when Spain had a civil war, basically he took over and had Spain under lock and key for 40 years until he died. And then Spain, out of that, quickly moved into democracy and had a socialist government for about 12 years, which really did quite a good job of bringing in democracy and religious freedom for the first time. That's a town hall, local town hall in Ferrol. Some of the fronts of the flags, and that's part of the centre of the city, which is quite old, and it is an old town, as most towns are in Spain. You can get very picturesque in different places, and most people would live in high-rise apartments. Spain is about the size of New South Wales, but has a population of 45 million, so you can't spread out, you have to go up. So most people would live like that. Some of them quite nice, others boring, others not so nice, but not leaving much room for playgrounds or sport fields as we would enjoy here in Australia. That's where you hang the washing, someone once asked. That's where you do the shopping. Usually the bottom floors of the high-rise buildings usually dedicated to business, or you can go to the local market where very good fresh food is always sold, or open fairs. Marketplaces usually held once or twice a month in each market area. The cafeterias, or the coffee shops, is very, very Spanish, very typical to the culture, where people are very people-minded, spend a lot of time, would rather spend time drinking coffee, talking or listening to people, rather than perhaps racing around doing this and doing that. The roads are quite good, getting better all the time, linking up the cities, but once you move into or enter into a city, you usually get first impression is that it's sort of, you know, crowded in, not much space with smaller cars, smaller streets and smaller apartments. That's a typical sort of suburban area. It's not the centre, or it's not the outskirts, and that's the street where we're working on at the moment. The streets can get smaller if you get into the older parts or the villages. And this is the street where we're living, which is one of the older parts in town. That's our flat, the one with the balcony and the flowers, which the place is more than 250 years old. If you're worried about your house being old, that's John, what's the time? You can forget a couple of questions. That's coming out the end of the street, and coming out of the end of the street you come into the port area, because we're right down on the port. And and one of the blessings of being, or where we are, even though it's an old flat, is we have a little backyard with able to have a swimming pool where the children can enjoy the summer, which is now. This is actually the summer time, August or July and August, when we get a little bit of sunshine. That's the school where the two girls go to. It's the bottom floor, the yellow and black painted outside. And that's them dressed up in folkloric costumes, which is typical of Galicia. And that's the university where Manon has been studying these last few years, doing the equivalent of a business science degree, which she's almost finished. Just a quick rundown on the religious situation again. As I said, Spain is 99.9% Roman Catholic, which means that if you're Spanish, you're Catholic. It dominates everything. You're born Catholic, you're a Christian Catholic, you're given a Catholic's name, you're given a saint's day to celebrate, every holiday is a Catholic, almost religious holiday festival. You're educated Catholic, you're a Christian, you're confirmed Catholic, you're married Catholic, and you're buried Catholic. The thing is that nowadays many people would be nominal. They wouldn't actually, it's an old slide, but it's a slide of the big cathedral in Santiago, which supposedly is where the remains of St. James are, and people still come, and even more and more people are coming to do pilgrimage from all over Europe by foot to worship those remains in that cathedral. Now, the assemblies have in Galicia quite a good reputation. They've been there for nearly 100 years from a brethren missionary movement, which was very effective at the turn of the century and going into the beginning of the century. And quite a lot of assemblies were started. The thing is, the work sort of stopped with the civil war and the depression and then the dictatorship. And a lot of the small assemblies, which is the case of most evangelical churches in Spain, there are very few, as I said before, and they're usually quite small. It could be from 5 to 10 to 15. If you get up to 30 people, you're looking at a good size. But the assemblies have some, a lot of smaller ones, but some big, quite stable assemblies throughout Galicia. The thing is, they're not really, the bigger ones don't have a need to reach out because they're more or less self-maintaining, and for several generations really no new work has begun. Now this is the building that we just recently using for the establishing of the new church, which is what is coming out of the work that we've been doing over these last years. It's called the Christian Center from Olivo. It's we're in relation with and working with the assemblies, and we really thankful for God. At least we have at the moment a place where we can meet. We have quite a steady core group, all new converts, all people from not from other churches but from a Catholic background, and we have a legal registration, which is not so easy to get these days in Spain. Just one final word on the religious scene is the work amongst the drug addicts, which is a big problem in Spain for quite a few years, and still in a smaller way we've collaborated with one of three or four Christian groups that work amongst the drug addict problem. And just to give you an idea of the size of the problem and the impact that these Christian groups are making, the group that we work with in the last past 12 years, they've set up more than 70 centres and would have at one time more than 10,000 people at a time in their centres. And not only a lot of people getting off drugs, but a lot of them are coming to know the Lord. And all of the centres are run by ex-drug addicts converted. And so they're making, it's almost like a revival, and they're making quite a big impact at the moment in the situation, religious situation in Spain, with the changes. We went, as I said before, 15 years ago to Ferrol, having previously worked myself 4 years with Operation Mobilization on the ship, which is where we actually met and got married in South America, and we went to Spain. And we went up to Ferrol, which is where we saw an opportunity to begin working. With the many young people coming from all over Spain to do the basic military training in the Navy base. And we opened up what we call a coffee house in the red light area, right next to the port, where we would offer free coffee every evening to and where to invite to come the young people who are walking around the streets. And that gave us a really good opportunity to begin to make those first contacts, to be able to, over coffee, perhaps a table game, perhaps just sitting and talking or listening, to be able to have the opportunity to be able to share the gospel with many of these young people that were coming from many different parts of Spain. Then after a couple of years in that work, Spain went into the European common market, and there was a big overhaul on all of the big national industries, and Ferrol got really hit hard, mainly depending on two big shipyards, this is one of them, and the Navy base. The Navy base got relocated, this shipyard almost closed down, and the other one got half closed down, so almost overnight we had unemployment go up to about 27%, and most people not receiving any dollar. So that was again where we found ourselves in that situation of saying, well, what are we going to do? All the people that we were having contact with, even those who were showing interest, and some of them had got converted, none of them had jobs or any income at all. So that's when we started to teach them how to make handcrafts so that they could at least make something and then go and sell it in the markets or door to door and get some sort of income. That developed into, we had to change buildings, that one on the corner, into a sort of a workshop, and almost a year later we had to change again into this large garage where we set up what we call a workshop school. And in these last few years we've been able to develop the workshop school to offer courses mainly in woodwork making furniture, restoring furniture, restoring antique furniture, with the aim of teaching work skills quickly so that people can not only learn something, but if they want to, soon they can begin to work for themselves and get some sort of income. We get people sent to us now from all over the place. These, a lot of men, middle-aged men, have their families, and they have no job, and they've applied to the government for some sort of funding, and the government, when they give it to them, send them to us to do the courses. So we get quite a lot of men that way. We get people who just come off the street who want to learn different trade skills. We get young people who come out of school. Again, a lot of government associations have different associations are sending us slightly handicapped people, and also girls, single mothers. Last year we had just as an example about 40 to 50 people going through these courses, which keeps us occupied most of the mornings in different groups that would come, and it's quite time involving, but the aim is to not just, as I explained, not just to have them learn some skills. In the afternoon we then take another group further on of those who want to get self-employed. It's always impossible for these people who are semi-skilled or not skilled and not properly skilled to get any sort of job. So the aim is to teach them some skills, help them in what perhaps they already know, to be able to get self-employed, whether if it's in the wood or the furniture making or furniture restoring, or if not, it could be repairing washing machines and fridges, and stoves, TVs, or doing repair jobs or painting houses, or working in a scrapyard. We also have, I'll explain that later, what that's all about. And through that, as I said before, it gives us the opportunity to be able to long term reach the goal of what we really want to get to. Now, we have all these people coming to us. We actually don't even have to go out after them now. And we have them with us for quite a long time, perhaps 6 months or a year or more, almost on a daily basis. And through that, we can build our friendships, they get to know us, we get to know them. We're able to share our faith on a normal basis when the opportunity arises, quite often in a normal working situation. If we see a need in their family, when we get involved, we help with food, we have a food stockpile or second-hand clothing or furniture. And we, if there's perhaps a drug problem in their family, as most families are in Spain, we can help them or the person in the family get to a Christian drug center, rehabilitation center, and when they come out, we can help them again in the following steps. We get involved just as much as we can. Aging, I think one of the ones that I had to take out was that through the contact and getting involved with the people, we eventually find that there are those who have spiritual interest. And so the next step is to get them involved in small Bible studies, one by one, or in small groups, and get them to come along to the meeting, and through that process, get them exposed to God's Word. I mean, for most, as I said before, the case is that they've never read the Bible for their own self. And so we have one meeting on the Sunday, and then during the week we continue in small groups. This is one of the three ladies groups that Manoli runs using KYV material in the continuing discipling, or almost what I call a re-education of what they would understand to be Christianity. We get involved with the children, there's a children's club, and also just again looking for always ways of getting more contact with the family, because the family structure in Spain is very strong, and it's very difficult just to get one and that person to remain without, because the peer pressure is the family pressure. And so the more people you can get from the family, the better, and the more stable that person is going to be long term. So you just can't get the children, no one will send their children to a Protestant youth work or children's work, but with the people that are coming, with the contacts, when there's a birthday to celebrate, they'll celebrate the birthday, get the parents to come. We're always looking for that way of just showing that we're normal people, we're there to help and get involved where we see we can get involved, and when we have the opportunity to share, we share. Yeah, it's a little kitchen, but we had some really big, nice meals come out of that, which at least once or twice a month we have a big meal where we invite as many people as we can, and again, that breaks down a lot of barriers. And as I said, over these last few years, with a lot of struggling, a lot of trying to get the first foundations down, as in some ways we're working, as I said before, with against a quite of a difficult front, and with unstable people to start off with, but we've seen God do something special in several lives, in several families, and eventually see a small assembly established with a small nucleus, which is we see as an important beginning of future growth. Now the work doesn't stop there, because most of we have about three buildings we have to pay rent on. A lot of money is involved in the actual running of the whole, all the different activities. And again, most of the people who get converted still don't have a steady job. So don't get any funding from the government, mainly because we haven't gone up to it, because that would probably tie us to, or restrict us in what we're aiming for. So rather we've set up what we call a self-financing project, which involves this van. We offer a service of picking up anything that people would throw out, and many people throw out a lot of stuff or give it to us because they're interested in the work and they want to support the work that we're doing. So we get a lot of furniture coming our way. If anyone understands furniture, you would go, what furniture we get? Most of it's all antique, solid chestnut or cedar, maybe 80-100 years old furniture, which we pull back into the workshops to teach how to restore or how to repair. We get a lot of second-hand clothing. We get a lot of household goods. Sometimes we get whole houses given to us. And all that is used to teach how to restore. Then it's put in one or four different second-hand shops that we run. And the sales from that helps finance the work. It also provides some temporary half-day employment, especially for the ones who get converted, or have families, and who we're seeking to help get a little bit more established. Could be working, driving the van. Could be working just in the van, picking up the furniture. Could be looking or selling in one of the second-hand shops, or just helping, sorting all the stuff around. Or could be teaching in one of the courses. Or could be working in one of the offices. So last year we had about 22 people who were receiving financial help or being half employed in some way through the work, and that's been an important step to help them get established. Now, I'm going to finish off with just a brief presentation of how we see the work or how we would like to see it develop in the near future. As I said before, we would understand that most missionary work in Spain would have to be, in one way or the other, aimed at church planting. With the thousands of towns that don't have any evangelical church, over 600, often large towns with a population of between 5,000 and 20,000 people, again with none. And actually in our area, right up along the north top coast, there are many of those towns which are not being reached in any way. And we have the burden to continue opening up new works. And what we're doing, what we want to do, we've taken on this challenge as in a fellowship in the next 5 years to begin opening three new works, with the goal of seeing them, as God works, ending in established churches. Now, we began in Jubia, spelled Xubia, which actually last time I was here, I think we probably would have mentioned that as a prayer point. We were praying about it, and God opened that door and provided this place. It was just a sort of peak roof building in the middle. And what we've done there would be basically the strategy that we probably use in the following places that we want to open. What we did there was to use first the property that we had at the back for the scrapyard, all the stuff for these washing machines and fridges and things that were getting given to us. In the patio, that's where we set up a little workshop to repair them, and in the back part for the scrapyard, if they can't be repaired, they've got scrap and all of the precious metals sold. So a little bit of finance came out of that to start repairing the building, which is a very old building. We repaired the bottom floor, which we set up another, what we call restroom, which is a hand shop, and eventually got that going, which has two aims. One is to have a presence in the town. If you just go in as a Christian group or evangelical, you'll have all doors closed.
And yet we find as we go in as with social work that people understand that, they're not frightened, they'll want to sometimes get involved, and we're able to start making contacts, we're able to have a presence, and able to start make the contacts, which is the first goal of doing evangelism in Spain. Also, selling what gets sold there helps finance the running and the repairing of the building, which needs continual repairing. It's old. We then started repairing the first floor, which now is almost finished, and it's sort of a hostel, which would be a place that, as I said, when everyone comes to visit, they have a nice hostel to stay in. And also it's a place that sometimes, or in the beginning at least, we used as a sort of a halfway house for people who were coming out of drug rehabilitation centres, and as we were helping them get established in the next step. The next step is we actually now run a monthly outreach there, and when we go back, we hope to set up a weekly Bible study with the contacts, with the long-term goal as God touches people, to get a small fellowship started. So, I think we'll stop there on the slides. And just to finish off with some easy prayer points, and I'm sure you're going to see someone once every 4 years, and this is one or perhaps many others to come through, sharing about this country and that country and all these places. How am I going to remember how to pray for these people, wherever they were and wherever they are? Well, we're working in Spain. Spain is spelled S-P-A-I-N. So I'm going to just give you just a couple of prayer points using the first letter of the word Spain, to give you a bit of an idea, a guideline of how to pray for us. S. If you pray for the spiritual warfare for us, or for any missionary, then I think you've got a good prayer point. You're always a big prayer need. Especially in Spain, which is the gospel really hasn't made any impact. The standing religion is very mixed up with a lot of very older religions, very all mixed up. And there's a lot of a lot of paganism, a lot of spiritism, and it's a very real thing. Actually, the Galicia, the area we're working in, is actually called the land of the witches. And it's a very real thing. And we find that, you know, as we get involved in Christian work, even just to be there, there's a very strong oppression. Sometimes it gets very physical. And as you get involved with people with their problems, whether it just be drug problems, whether it be unemployment problems, whether it be depression problems, whether it be just religious problems that they, you know, just don't understand the gospel, it's a spiritual problem. It's a spiritual bondage, it's a spiritual oppression, it's a spiritual blindness. And for God to see a spiritual work done, I mean, it has to be a spiritual work done, which is really through prayer. And so, S, pray for the spiritual warfare, because it basically starts off and finishes with that. P, pray for people. Now, quite often, you know, we sort of forget that. God sent His only Son to the world, gave His life to the world, but Jesus came and He spent His time with people. He addressed people, He talked to people, He touched people, He spoke with people, individuals. And the mission work, or evangelical or evangelistic work, is that. I mean, it's people, ones and twos, they've got names, they've got their lives, their problems. And if anyone would want to keep in contact with us, we try and send out a prayer letter every 2 months or so, and often we just mention people's names, perhaps a little bit about their situation, and ask prayer for them. Well, that's because, you know, you can pray specifically for Jose, you can pray specifically for Marcos, you can pray specifically for these people, which is, you know, if we're going to see a church established, the church is made of people. And unless we see people's lives getting changed, we're not going to see the goals reached, no matter how many programs or activities or strategies we have. Then we got R, or A. I don't know how you pronounce it. A. Well, they can pray for us. We're the Allen family. We're there. We're happy. It's not difficult for us. It's actually harder for us to come here than to be there. And we really thank God just for the way He's looked after us, He's provided, and He's helped us to to get established, because it's a long term work. But And we have the same family problems as any family would have anywhere. We've got children, and we've got needs, and we've got the usual sort of, we're a family, normal family, and we need prayer for as anyone would need prayer for. We go to I, and you can pray just for increase. We've been working there for 15 years, and for more than half of that time, really it was just trying, for me, my case, it was basically learning the language, learning the culture, trying to find the way, the best way, the best strategy. This way doesn't work, try that way doesn't work, try this way. There's a lot of work involved with many times not seeing much fruit. And many missionaries work in Spain, they last for 3 years, 5 years, 8 years at the most, and then they go home discouraged, or they don't really see anything happen. It's one of those countries that you just don't see things happen much. But God works. Maybe you've got to wait longer, but it's still the same God, and God does work, does give increase, does give fruit, will establish His church, but just pray that God give us that patience, the wisdom, the discernment, the wisdom to be able to work and sow in the right way, so that there will be increase, fruit. And then finish off with N, we pray for the nationals, because we're not the only ones working there, and actually we're not the ones who are going to turn Spain upside down. We're not going to be the ones who are going to look after the local churches in the future. It's just the national church, and we're actually after, we're trying to get national people involved in taking the responsibility and running with the work. If we're going to see the churches established, it has to be with national people, and there are, as I said, there are some very big assemblies with a lot of young people, and we're really in the next few years with the goal of seeing three new works established, or two more, including Karen Kubia, along with Kubia. We would really like to be able to get more involvement, see more people wanting to get involved from the existing assemblies to help in establishing those new works. So pray for Spain, for the spiritual warfare, for the people, for the Allen family, for fruit or increase, and for the national leaders. Thank you very much.